My name is Thomas, and I'm 25 years old. A few months back, I got a job at McDonald's. I already had a day job as a restaurant waiter, but I needed more money, since I wanted to get my own apartment and move out of my parents' house, finally. Ironically, during the day, I was a waiter at a top chef restaurant, which served exquisite and exclusive fresh cuisine. The food there was very expensive. Unfortunately, waiters weren't paid proportionally. Above average, but still not enough. All due respect towards you other commoners who can't afford anything beyond Big Macs, double cheeseburgers, and chicken nuggets. In any case, I wasn't going to work at McDonald's every day. Well, in fact, I wasn't going to work during the days at all, since I was taking the night shifts. Most of the time, I was taking orders from people who were using the drive-thru service, being served in the comfort of their own cars. The first weeks went by, and overall, it wasn't anything that I wasn't expecting. Even during the nighttime, I knew I had to attend a generous amount of customers. A few of them were sketchy, verbally aggressive, and menacing, while others were visibly drunk, which is the last thing you should be when driving a car, but I would say 60% of the people were easygoing and nice to serve. After a couple months, I got a customer that was definitely particular. It was a woman, maybe in her late 40s. She was good-looking with big blue eyes. She had a big smile on her face. Short blonde hair. The woman was very nice and talkative. She even gave me a tip, which is not common, to be honest. She simply ordered a cheeseburger, a Coke, and a small bag of fries. So far, nothing weird about this. The thing is, the woman returned exactly 1 week later. But this time, she looked very different, including her attitude. She was dressed like a gothic woman, including her makeup. She had skull-shaped earrings and a creepy look in her eyes, and a general cold and eerie expression on her face. It was like she was analyzing me and seeing me for the first time. Although I can't say she was rude, I was genuinely freaked out by her. This time, she doubled her previous order. 2 cheeseburgers, 2 Cokes, and 2 small bags of fries. And no thank you, and no tip. A few days later, as my McDonald's night shift came to an end, I was tired and anxious to get in my car and drive back home. The parking lot was almost empty, except for 2 cars, one being mine. But there were 2 individuals there, precisely right next to my vehicle. Hello? Can I help you? I asked, a bit nervous as I approached them. Yes, mister. You most certainly can, a woman said. I was very surprised to see the same mysterious woman. As I looked over at the other figure, I almost froze when I saw it was the same woman. Meaning, there were 2 of them. They had to be twins, of course. The one who was speaking to me was the nice, smiling woman, and the other, who was silent, was the gothic woman. What do you need help with? It's kind of late, I asked, trying to avoid showing my insecurity. Just look into my eyes, the smiling woman said, as she came closer to me. The woman started whispering some words. For some strange reason, I couldn't stop looking at her big, bright eyes. I started to feel numb, and then sleepy, and then I simply lost consciousness. When I woke up, I was tied up and lying on the floor. I think I was probably at their house. Irina, he woke up. The gothic woman was staring at me, sitting on a chair.
Ah, excellent.
Hello, Thomas. The smiling twin approached and was now speaking to me, as if I was her best friend.
What is this? What do you want, money? Take anything you need, just don't hurt me, I said.
Ah, unfortunately, my good Thomas, our interests are exactly the opposite. We don't want money. We want to take your life, she answered.
What? Why?
I screamed. My name is Irina, and this is my twin sister, Olga. We symbolize the different bipolar planes of existence. I represent order, light, and life. And Olga stands for chaos, darkness, and death. We seldom meet, and, as you would expect, we don't get along very well. But once a year, there's a common ritual that we share, which serves both of our antagonist causes and different paths. The smiling woman said, being enigmatic and vague.
I think you both need fucking therapy. Just let me go, please. I won't say anything.
I shouted. You will be set free soon enough. How does the order and chaos meet? By taking a life. Because life itself needs death in order to progress in time and space. So we are going to kill you, Thomas. And then we will mix your flesh with the hamburger meat. You understand the sacred meaning of this, right? The cycle of life and death. Your flesh will be feeding hundreds of homeless human beings, hence contributing to the existence of their lives. While at the same time, you will free the world of your own life. Irina's explanation was insane.
You're crazy. Let me out! Help!
I started to scream like a maniac. Just a few more moments, Thomas. Embrace your place in the wonderful circle of life. Olga is coming with a knife, Irina said. I could feel my heart beating inside my chest. I couldn't listen to my own breathing. I wasn't even shouting anymore. I saw Olga, the gothic sister, come closer with knife in hand. But then, the unexpected happened. Olga stabbed Irina in the throat. Irina's big eyes were as surprised as mine as she looked towards her sister. Olga spoke. I'm so sorry, my sister. Our partnership is over. Tonight, chaos wins and rules alone. And you have to admit, you didn't see this one coming, did you? That's why I always win. Irina fell and died within a few minutes. Before leaving, Olga whispered to me, "You were saved by chaos. Never forget this. Goodbye." Then the gothic sister left. The next day I was found by my colleagues and they called the cops. I told them what happened and repeated my story to the police. Olga was never found. I guess she was right. Chaos always wins.
The hunger to make some extra income drove me towards a part-time job at McDonald's a few blocks from my house. It didn't cost me extra money to close from work as an editor in a publishing company and arrive for my night shift at the fast food place. So as long as I was willing to work without any complaints, they were willing to hire me. I convinced the manager to assign me to the night shift permanently, and it posed no problem whatsoever. My routine was always the same. Wake up each morning, cook, prepare for the day, and arrive at the publishing house by 8 a.m. Once the clock struck 5 p.m., I rushed out and found my way to the fast food place. After closing at 9 p.m., I trekked down the few blocks that came before the condo where I lived. The sad part, however, showed up in how tired I was every evening. Of course, it wasn't easy for a person to spend more than 12 hours outside their home each day. If things went well, I hoped to make enough money to cover my debt within 2 years and then take a rest. But that drive didn't compensate for the stress that overwhelmed me every once in a while. Other times, I loved the urge to cook or eat. Perhaps this could explain the indifference I felt one night after closing. I was on my way home, two blocks from my condo, when I heard footsteps behind me. They were silent and subtle. Almost like the person wanted me to notice them, but also didn't want me to. I didn't look back for a while. But when the perfect blend of the silent steps and darkness indulged fear in me, I turned. Almost as soon as I did, my eyes caught sight of a shadow. Whoever it was, he ran down the neighborhood, and my impulse caused me to run after him. When I got nearer to the end of the block without catching up, I turned back and chose to return home. But I found myself turning back to look and make sure that no one was following me. I hated the fear that little encounter planted in me. When I got home, I double-checked my locks and shut all the windows, even the windows in my room. I cuddled with fear in my bed that night, hoping against all hope that what I encountered earlier was nothing more than an expensive joke my mind played on me. I slept it off. Sleep must have erased the memory of the previous night's scare, because when I woke up the next morning, I'd forgotten all about the chase and the mysterious stalker. I followed my usual routine and got ready for work. By 8 a.m., I was at my desk in the publishing house. By some minutes past 5 p.m., I arrived at McDonald's for my night shift. I didn't expect anything extra for the day. Customers trooped in and out as usual. But around 8 p.m., almost 3 hours after I arrived, I noticed a seat that was still occupied. I called the attention of one of the workers, and he agreed that the man who occupied the seat had been there even long before he arrived. It piqued my interest. Not because he looked homeless and shabby, but because every time I turned to look at the man, he looked away, like he had been studying me the whole time. I decided to do something about the whole weird situation and report to my manager, but because we were near closing hours, he resorted to leaving him. My lazy-ass manager concluded that he would leave after the shop closed and that he wouldn't hurt anyone. To be honest, on the call it felt like he didn't want to be bothered with whatever he was doing that evening, so I let it slide. True to what my manager said, once the closing hour arrived, the man left without being cajoled, although he didn't order one thing. I also left and started my journey back home. I wouldn't have remembered what happened to me last night. Not if it didn't happen to me again. I was not far gone when I heard the same footsteps behind me. Slow and subtle, as though the person wanted to, and also at the same time, didn't want to be noticed. I turned sharper than I did the night before and didn't wait for the individual to run. I ran in their direction in the dark. But the person was smart, too. He took to his heels and hurried off ahead of me. I didn't catch up with him in the end. I loathed how tiredness had reduced me to the weakest version of myself. If it were any other day, or a day when I didn't have to work all day, I would have caught the man. But at least I was glad to have caught on to something. The person wasn't young, and they always ran in a zigzag manner. The next day, when I arrived at McDonald's, I was surprised to see the man that lingered the previous day in the same spot again. Maybe if he didn't pester the customers with his eyes and mannerless drools, I would have left him. But he caused so much pain just by sitting there that I had to alert my co-workers. The man refused to budge. I saw the frustration in the eyes of all of us and decided to lend a helping hand. I had once volunteered at a refugee camp, and so I had some knowledge of handling weirdos. I spoke with the man, and as soon as I did, he reasoned with me and agreed to leave with just one clause.
"Please, see me out."
I nodded and followed the man as he exited the building. I shouldn't have laid my guard down, but how could I have known that he carried a dagger with him? We were barely outside when he retrieved his hand from his coat and thrust the sharp tool into my stomach. I screamed and fell to the ground. My co-workers came to me while I watched the man run away in a zigzag manner. I should have known. He was the stalker. Blood gushed through my stomach like an open tap, and I coughed. I wished with all my strength that it wasn't as bad as I thought, and that I wasn't dying. But my eyes closed, and my body surrendered to oblivion. Thankfully, I opened them again a few hours later. That's what the detective who stood guard by my side said. My surgery was successful, and I would be out of the hospital soon. I was at least grateful that I didn't end up dead, or worse, alive and handicapped. I asked about the man, and the detective assured me that he was caught and arrested. The detective said that the man confessed to having stabbed me, but he wasn't saying the reason. Or his excuse didn't seem like it. The man had claimed that he only wanted to test his new knife, and he felt like I was the perfect prey. I was scared to hear something like that. I told the police about the stalking, and the evidence made me know the man was the same. He took my statement and assured me that the man would pay for his crime. I thanked him for his efforts. 2 weeks later, I was discharged. I still didn't give up my job at McDonald's. Even though I worked under constant fear, I had a mountain of debt to clear. Many students across the years at my school have often spread rumors about weird teachers. Well, the truth is that most of them were completely harmless. But having an odd stare, a freaky smile, or even talking to the wrong student was enough to have them deemed as creepy by the cohort of students at my school. They were usually just a select few who would pretty much gossip about anyone and everyone. But when it came to teachers, they didn't hold back. There had even been cases of teachers getting fired because of the rumors. Teachers who my older brother had been taught by years ago, saying they were some of the most wonderful people he had ever met. Or so they had appeared. The problem with repeatedly getting teachers fired without reason was that when a teacher joined the school who had actual issues, the school would likely ignore any further complaints about them, believing all the students to be spreading more rumors just for the sake of getting the teachers fired. This exact problem had happened to my year. A year that had only just escaped from lockdown, and we were returning to a school we'd never been in before. Yet, we'd been a part of it for a full academic year now. We were far too naive to be able to distinguish between teachers, which made identifying them difficult, making the first few weeks back a struggle. But after a while, we became used to them, and them to us. And in one case in particular, far too close.
Morning, everybody.
My English teacher, Miss Hart, a woman of around 27 years of age, only a few years out of uni and fresh out of teacher training, was doing her usual morning greeting. "Morning, Miss!" we all shouted back. There was a general clamor of excitement, as Miss had told us the day before that we were getting a new assistant to replace the old one which had left due to his son getting cancer. A horrific situation for such a kind man that he had been to us.
"Our new teaching assistant arrives today. Are you all excited?"
Her cheerful tone delighted the class, and our faces twisted into smiles of joy as we all cocked our heads towards the door, ready to see the new TA. As we turned around to face the door, there were a couple of shocked gasps as many snapped their necks away from the door to face a man sat at a desk in the far right, his glasses tinted with the blue light flashing from his screen. He noticed us all looking at him immediately and lifted his head up to sync with his eyes. He bore no expression of a smile as he looked around the room, until his eyes fell on me. His solemn face suddenly morphed into a rather sadistic smile that stabbed into me like one tectonic needle piercing through my heart. "Good morning. I look forward to working closely with you." Even Miss Hart was slightly creeped out by his estranged movement and seismic glare as he seemed to be directing his words only towards me. I was petrified, and it wasn't long before the terror escalated and Mr. Hollard grew near.
"Morning, Harry. How'd you sleep last night?"
It had been around 5 days since his appearance in the classroom, and since then he had consistently sat as close as he could to me in every lesson. With many lessons that came after break being sat down next to my seat, cutting me off from my friends, leaving me no choice but to sit next to him. He would plague me at first with questions about how I found the school, but then, soon enough, those questions began devolving into far more personal ones.
"It was good, thanks."
I responded to one of his ominous queries with haste and straightened my neck out to face towards Miss Hart, who was beginning the lesson. Around 10 minutes in, the moment we were given tasks to do the remainder for the first half of the lesson, he pounced once again.
"So, Harry, got any plans this weekend?"
His voice was incessantly beginning to sound almost intimidating as he peered down at my page, edging closer, pretending to examine my work. I'm busy all weekend with my dad and brother.
We're going clay pigeon shooting.
That ought to scare him off, I thought.
Oh, how fun. Bring me back some shrapnel, will ya?
He chuckled to himself for a moment, and then engaged his glare once more at my quivering eyes. I subtly nodded and tried to hold my focus to my work, doing my best to avoid eye contact with this creature of a man staring into my soul.
You want to know what I'm up to this weekend?
He stared at me, his mouth slightly ajar, waiting for my response with a foul grin.
No, sir.
I tried to reply plainly so he wouldn't delve into too much detail. I probably shouldn't have spoken at all.
I'm going hunting. Yep. Me, my shotgun, and whatever damned creature finds itself in my way.
I shivered at his disgusting habit. He wouldn't shut up about how much he enjoyed hunting, hiding from prey before pouncing, and most of all, he wouldn't stop discussing his 12-gauge shotgun.
Hey, you wanna see the shotgun? It's a real beauty. I have it in my car.
Following my instinct, I sprang up from my seat and beckoned Nis to let me leave for the toilet. I needed to get away from that freak. I had had enough of it. I swiftly made my way to the bathroom opposite and found a cubicle for me to sit down and try to take a few deep breaths before going back out and having to listen to that vile beast heckle into my ear about his guns, his hunting, his delirious lifestyle. My blood froze as I heard the door open with a loud slam coming from the door smashing into the wall.
Harry, I know you're in here. Come with me, I want to show you how awesome my cool gun is.
My nerves seized up in seconds, and I reactively hoisted my legs up off the floor so he couldn't spot them from beneath the stall doors.
Harry, I'm getting impatient. Come out quickly before Miz realizes we aren't going to the toilet.
I was utterly stricken with terror at this point, and I certainly wasn't going to leave anytime soon unless he left me be. I heard footsteps slowly approach the cubicle door. It was him, that creature that had come for me. And now, a thin plastic door was all that held him back from me. His heavy breathing indicated that he was ready to break his way in if he needed to.
Harry, I said come out!
Please, can Mr. Hollard come to the head's office now?
The speakers boomed down the corridors and through the closed bathroom door. Had I been saved?
I'll be right back, Harry. Don't you dare leave now!
He laughed maniacally as he exited the room. And hearing the bathroom door close once more, I launched myself out of the cubicle and returned back to Miss Hart's class, far too afraid to try and speak out about what had just happened in fear I would be deemed a liar. All because of the rumors spread around by the years before us. Some god must have been watching over me, however, as the next day I came into class and Mr. Hollard was nowhere to be seen. And the same happened the next day, and the day after, and so on until it finally clocked that Mr. Hollard was gone. Whatever had gone down in the head's office, I will never know, but it saved me from whatever twisted plot he'd been using on me to try and get me to his car. I was terrified, but not yet scarred. Though I never dared to interact with another member of staff I hadn't known for the rest of school. Even now, age 30, and I still can't even fathom talking to someone new, even at work. I would be too cautious. I wouldn't let anyone else come so uncomfortably close to me again. I wouldn't risk it. I'm too afraid.
Welcome. This will be where you two are going to stay for the next couple of days. We have amazing activities planned for you. Hope you're excited. Please, go take a look at your rooms and see what you think. You're over at Cabin 4. See you soon.
Marquez, our host, returned to the staff shack, and my wife, Elizabeth, and I were left to explore our accommodation.
Wow, it's beautiful, isn't it, Mark? You really paid for the whole thing?
I felt slightly insulted by Elizabeth's remark, but considering just how poor we were, it wasn't a surprise she had expected a worse-off honeymoon. Luckily for the two of us, this place popped up as I was searching for honeymoon destinations abroad, and the prices were dirt cheap.
It was strange that they were that cheap, considering how luxurious the place appeared to be. The accommodation was located on one of the islands under the Solomon Islands area. The sea reflected the pure blue in the sky, and the water was clear enough to see the bottom, only whilst on the shoreline. We were staying on some kind of pier further out into the sea. On the pier, there was a ring of cabins all around one large opening into the sea in the middle, and each of our cabins had a stairway leading down into the depths. Now, personally, I was marginally afraid of the sea. If you can't see the bottom, then how are you supposed to know what's down there? I pushed aside my fears for Beth. She grew up on a British coastal town, so the sea was like a second home to her, hence the reason why she loved the place so much. Haha, don't worry, honey, I got us a special deal on the place, so money doesn't matter. Let's go look inside, shall we? She nodded eagerly and leaned in to kiss me. She giggled after and headed inside. I followed, mesmerized by both the cabin's beauty and Beth's.
Oh my, Mark, there's a back porch that has a stairway leading into the sea. That's so exciting. I'll be sure to go for a swim later tonight.
I walked over towards her, admiring the crystal white bed covered in roses, with the rest of the cabin being covered in lavish furniture. Even a TV sat on the wall. I had no clue how they had any wires come out here, but however so, it was impressive for such a small price.
Dear Lord, you can't even see the bottom, Beth. What if something's down there?
I was shivering a little at the thought of something lurking beneath the wooden stairwell, waiting for a pair of legs to grace the platform, ready for whatever it was to latch on and devour them whole.
Oh, don't be so silly, Mark. There aren't any sharks for another 3 miles out to sea. And sharks don't bother to come near resorts like this anyway, considering they hunt sharks around here.
Her retort set me straight for a moment. Fine. But if you see a fin, get out immediately. And if you do go in the water, just let me know so I can come check on you. I was worried about her. We only got married 3 days ago. I certainly didn't want to lose my wife within the first week of our marriage.
Maybe. We'll be together most of the time anyway, so it won't matter. Now I'm hungry. Let's go eat, she said, as we made our way outside the cabin, off towards the staff cabin to ask about food.
On our way, I looked at the circle opening to the sea in the center of the cabins. It had a slight tint of red in it, and the water was only clear for a couple of meters before cutting off into the murky depths below. I was incredibly nerved by it. But hunger was our focus, so I snapped back into reality.
Hey, Marquez, we just came to ask about the food situation. Do we have to wait until dinner, or is there something we can eat now?
Her eyes were lit up with hopefulness.
Ah, sorry, Mrs. Rochester. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner are the only times food's served. But luckily for you, dinner here is at 5 every day, so give us 10 minutes or so, and it'll be delivered straight to your shack.
Beth leaped into the air out of joy, and we thanked Marquez, then returned to our cabin awaiting the food.
What do you think it'll be, Mark?
Beth asked me excitedly. Well, as long as it's food, I don't care too much, but I have a feeling it'll be seafood. She chuckled momentarily as we sat down on the little table and chairs inside our cabin and awaited our food nervously. We spoke for 10 minutes before finally hearing a knock on our cabin door. We opened it, and a staff member stood there bearing 2 plates with a bowl on each. He handed them to us and said, "Shark fin soup! Enjoy!" He left immediately, and we sat down to eat. "I've never had shark fin soup before," Beth stated as she picked up her spoon and began downing the liquid. "Neither have I. I don't like the sound of it," I said as I also began digging in. "It wasn't terrible. But hearing how hunting sharks attracted more sharks inland towards the coasts, it terrified me." We didn't take long to eat. It was a thick substance, which made it easier to consume. And soon enough, we had left our empty bowls outside, ready to be collected, and both feeling tired. We hit the bed for a nap. I woke up hearing the sound of a scream from outside the cabin. I sat up looking around me wildly for Beth. Her side of the bed had its covers flung off, and there was no sign of her anywhere around the cabin.
The scream continued, and so I leapt out of bed, sprinting out the back of the cabin onto the porch to find where the screaming was coming from. It was pitch black outside, with the remaining bits of sunlight being sucked behind the horizon. There were few lights dotted around the area, but there was enough light to see a velvet red liquid pool around the stairwell leading into the sea. No. Beth! Blood and water! Nighttime! Sharks! Suddenly, the scream once again arose from the water, and I could see Beth splashing around, screeching for help. I grabbed her arm and tried hoisting her up at first, but whatever great beast was pulling her from below restricted me from hauling her out. All of a sudden, the door behind me burst open, and in rushed Marquez, followed by several staff members who had heard the screams and had come to help. Two of the staff members fortunately held harpoon guns and dove into the depths below. There was a moment of struggle as Beth wailed in agony. But then, the resistance below had suddenly stopped, and we finally plucked Beth out of the water, though only what remained of her. Her entire left leg had been ripped off, and her right was badly wounded, with several teeth marks lining her calf and thigh. Marquez beckoned for one of the staff members to go and call some kind of ambulance service, which they did. And in 15 minutes, a boat arrived at the docking area, and Beth's mauled body was hauled aboard. I went with her, and we arrived at a small local hospital after 30 minutes or so of sailing. I held her palm in mine tightly, clutching onto her very life essence. "You'll be okay, Beth. I promise." I followed her inside the hospital, but was restricted from entering the surgical room. There was a short period of time where I was stationed alone in the waiting room. And to my foul despair, the doctor came out and spoke the words I can never forget. "I'm sorry, sir. She's dead."